Welcome to this week's episode of Menopause Uprising with me, your host, Catherine O'Keefe. So where is Ireland on the platform in relation to menopause in the workplace, and how are our counterparts in Canada doing? Today, I'm thrilled to chat to my lovely friend, Amanda Thebe, who is a huge advocate of menopause globally and is now flying the flag in Canada of raising awareness of menopause across society and also in workplaces. We talk about many aspects of menopause and, you know, how you can you support yourself through these years. Also check out the show notes for links to Amanda and where you can follow her. I hope you enjoy the episode. Thank you. So, Amanda, is it safe to say, and you can shoot me if I'm saying this wrong, no offence intended, but is it safe to say that Ireland is ahead of menopause in the workplace compared to Canada?
I think that's fair. I think in general, the UK have led the way, and then you've been like champion Ireland, literally single-handedly for a couple of years. There's other people doing it now. You were very much instrumental in me doing workplace talks. We had, you gave me some counselling sessions, if you remember rightly. Because what happened is I got the opportunity to do a couple of talks, and I was like, wow, I was approached to do them actually for British companies online. And then, you know, the momentum built, and I know that I am one of the few people doing them over here in Canada. And it really took off last year, like in October. I think I did like 16, 18 talks in the workplace, virtually or in person. It's hard doing in-person talks in Canada. It's the second biggest country in the world. It's huge. it's not always very practical to be in person. But it's really it's really taken off. Menopause has kicked off over here now, yeah, for sure.
And do you think that is like when the way I look at it is, I would definitely say the UK is kind of, you know, has led the way. And I certainly think from a European perspective, Ireland is very much now up there in terms of, you know, bringing that awareness in the workplace. And, you know, a lot of other countries are starting to look. But I think when I look at North America, I think certainly the work that you're doing in Canada, that's even ahead of the US, isn't it? Because I know I've done some talks myself in the US, but they seem to be streets behind.
Yeah, I don't see a lot there. There's some great organizations. There's one called Let's Talk Menopause that are doing awareness campaigns and stuff. But I do North America. So I do Canada and America. It's about halfy half for me. And usually the American ones are virtual. I actually like doing the American ones because I get paid in US dollars. So it's good. I mean, I'm joking, but I mean, this is a job, yeah. So I expect to get paid.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, I've seen the momentum, I've seen the way it grows. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of medical people will do talks. I've seen those in the workplace. But what it's really interesting is that here's what I'm trying to say. Recently, I did one, and this is funny, in a province called New Brunswick. New Brunswick is the only bilingual province in Canada. And what that means is whenever they do a presentation or a talk, they have to have a French-speaking presenter with an English. So I did this virtual one that was also in person. It was like, you know, a bit of a mixed
hybrid
bag. A hybrid one. And the first person that came on was a doctor. And she was an OBGYN, very well-respected French-speaking OBGYN. And she went into this very technical talk for about an hour. And at the and I was reading the chat, and people were like, well, I don't even understand French. But, you know, in this is – it was – and then I did mine. And I did mine as, like you, as a non-medical menopause educator and advocate. And anything I said that was medical was a literal verbatim of the medical position statement. You know, I don't cross any lines, just like you. And the feedback that I got was much better than I expected. And I think it was because a lot of people don't need to know, like, and this is the medication you take from this, and this is the med. They just were like, what is it? What do I do? What are the practical sides of it? And I think that that's why it's working, because we're going in and we're talking to women saying, listen, we're not asking you to, we're not trying to diminish anything you've tried to achieve in the decades of getting to the top of your game. What we're trying to do is to build awareness, give you support, give you the tools to advocate for yourself so that the workplace experience is better and more productive. And I think that that's a unique way of talking about menopause.
And I think you're right. I think, I guess for anyone, we probably need all the little pieces of the puzzle, all the bits of information to bring it all together. But I think sometimes overwhelm is very common in menopause. I'd see that a lot, particularly in the workplace. So I think sometimes when you can just come in with the clarity behind it and where people can understand the options that they have, I think that brings a lot of relief for women in the workplace, particularly those women who, like you say, have been in the workplace for a long time and maybe you've never had a challenge or a struggle before. And now all of a sudden, menopause is presenting new challenges. And Amanda, I would have the similar symptoms that would come up in the workplace here. I'm presuming it's the same in Canada. Would you find that brain fog is the kind of the number one symptom that women would report as impacting in their work in Canada and North America in general?
Yeah, in North America, I would say the cognitive issues that come with menopause definitely are up there, as well as the hot flushes. Like, they definitely are things that, like, women bring up all the time. What's really interesting, and just not feeling themselves, you know, not recognizing themselves. Yeah. But actually what's really interesting is, I just want to go back to what you said about clarity. I think there's always a risk of doing these workplace talks and giving too much information, trying to share everything that you know. And you and I both wrote books on this. We don't need to share the whole book. We need to give enough information so that women feel empowered. One of the things I've really taken from these workplace talks, and obviously, you know, you learn as you go along and you find your groove and you find the message that resonates and et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things I find to be the most impactful is when female executives, you know, CEOs, CFOs, whatever, head of HR, are involved in the talks that I do. And so they usually do like an introduction, probably the same for you. They're usually the ones that are pulling this together, which I'm very happy to see. And then sharing their stories and saying, you know, I was in a meeting and I forgot words, or I had a hot flash, or I just didn't want to come in today. I just felt so terrible and I didn't know what to do. And I don't think that these executives realize how powerful that is, that they show vulnerability with their strength. And then I see the whole room change. I see the whole room change and people go, well, if it's okay for her to talk about it, then I will too. And all of a sudden, the big taboo and stigma that goes with menopause in the workplace diminishes completely.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I've seen that on so many occasions where you'll have someone, and I think it can be anyone sharing their story, but it definitely lends more weight when it's a C-suite executive who's kind of sharing the story, because opening up to that vulnerability is like, oh my God, really? And because a lot of people will perceive, like, I know for me, Amanda, when I was a director in the bank, I can tell you, nobody realized or saw the issues that I was having with brain fog. Because, and I would say, and I know when I've talked to people about it, they're like, God, you'd never have known, you know. But it's a bit like the duck, the analogy of the duck, you know, you look nice and calm, you know, on the lake or the river or whatever, but underneath you're paddling furiously to try and keep up and to try and keep everything going, right?
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I think that, you know, putting this mask on and making, like, putting a brave face on doesn't help anyone. But it's also, I think it probably was more, when I talk to women, I feel like it's more that it's actually coping strategies, isn't it? It's like, because a lot of these feelings that women get and these symptoms that get are transient, right? They're not here to stay. So what can you do to make your day successful, to make your job successful, to feel like you're actually contributing, etc. And so I understand why people would say, well, I never saw that part of you, but I wonder whether part of you wishes you'd said to someone, yeah, you know what, I'm struggling a bit, and it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, I think if I was back there now, I'd have it up on a whiteboard. You know, I think if I was back there, hindsight's a great thing. If I was back there now, I certainly, you know, I think I would be more confident to discuss it. But remember, when I started perimenopause, nobody was talking about perimenopause. All we were hearing about was menopause and hot flushes. There was very little talk in Ireland at that stage about perimenopause. And I think obviously it's my own kind of journey that led me to start talking about it. But, you know, I think, look, we've been lucky here with the work that a lot of workplaces are doing around policy and so forth, and the work the government are doing. But are you starting to see anything happening in Canada at the government level in relation to the workplace?
No, not really. But, you know, I work closely with a organization called the Menopause Foundation of Canada, and we've been in talks about trying to sort of emulate the work that Diane Danzebrink has been doing with the Menopause Support Network. She, to me, is the definite thought leader in this area, and I know that she had very clear strategic changes that she wanted in place. And the Canadian government structure is very similar to the British Parliament structure. Like the US is a completely different system altogether, but there's, you know, there would be ways to sort of mimic some of the work Diane's done. And so that's something that I'm going to start having conversations about. I know there's other organizations trying to make change, but I feel like sometimes I don't always like the way they're looking to make policy change. You know, there's an organization called the Menopause Mandate in the UK, and I was watching the work they're doing. And I sometimes think that the way we make change and the way we approach things matters. And just having angry sound bites on social media to me is like pissing in the wind, like shooting into the void. And I don't think it really achieves anything. And I don't want to like talk about like women being angry and frustrated in a negative way, because usually that propels us forward to make change. But you want to present yourself in a really respectful way, in a professional way. And I know that Diane does that, and I really respect her strategy for doing that. So if I'm going to do anything, I think it would be along those lines. And I know that I'm pretty well connected over here in Canada, and so I think I can be part of the movement to help change happen. And the three policies that Diane was looking to change in same in Ireland is workplace policy, education, and healthcare education, right? Yeah. And to me, they're the three big rocks that are easy to sort of make very simple change that will have big impacts. Yeah. And I definitely, we were talking off air about social media. Both of us are very frustrated with it. It's not a very nice place a lot of the time, even though we try to keep the information we put out there very sane and practical, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like I can do more work behind the scenes now. That's where I feel like I can make impact. And honestly, for me, I think that feels better too. You know?
Yeah, I get that. And I think there's a few things there. But I think in relation to the social media, it's kind of like, to me, what I do on social media, that's only a dip in the pond to what I'm doing every day, you know, and it's kind of like the real meat of it, I guess, I look at is the work that I'm doing in workplaces and communities on a daily basis. That's really where, you know, and the way I look at that, that's, you know, social media, I guess, like, look, it works in some ways, it works brilliantly, and in other ways it doesn't. And I think, you know, when you mentioned there about putting out negative sound bites, all that does is it gets a bit of traction, and it's momentarily, and it's for what? For there's no end goal there. And I think, like, going back to Diane's the three key aims, like, you know, we've done a huge amount here in Ireland in relation to the medical treatment of menopause. We've yet to get it in colleges for in terms of training. As for education, that's been requested so many times, it's still there. I think it will happen, but I think it's not high on the agenda. But the workplace is definitely happening, and at the kind of the government level as well, which I think is great. So I think this year we'll probably see more in relation to menopause in the workplace in Ireland, which
that's,
I think,
amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, I'm really excited for that. So
and what I would say on that is that I think it's really important to clarify what we're trying to achieve with workplace talks, because I read this article, and it was a horrible article, right? But it's definitely worth talking about. And it was a woman in Australia saying, all these women moaning and complaining about menopause, what you're doing is you're setting back the movement for women. You're not helping. And I just was like, well, you're completely missing the point here, because it's exactly the opposite. And you and I invite men to the conversation too, so that this is a company-wide conversation. And what we're actually doing is empowering women and giving them information, because there's a massive knowledge gap. And one of the things that happened over here at the end of last year is a report was issued by this Menopause Foundation of Canada. It's an advocacy group. They don't get paid any money. They receive funding to be able to do a massive survey about workplace in Canada. And the numbers that they pulled up were crazy. 3.9 billion is lost in workplace in the economy based on untreated symptoms. And, you know, the numbers that they put out there were actually shocking to me. And I've been talking about this for like 8-9 years now, like you. And so if we know that there's a financial impact, if there's a cost and burden on not talking about menopause in the workplace, well, that's easy for us to rectify. And then we can give workplaces educational resources and tools and solutions, and get them to have like somebody who's allocated in HR to be able to listen to women's conversations and say, hey, listen, I can give you the resources to help you find the help you need. And you know, and I think that when you offer solutions, you're not putting anybody's movement back at all. You're actually empowering women.
Totally. Yeah. And like, I mean, what we don't want to do is go we never want to go backward on this conversation. We've opened the lid. So now it needs to be to really progress it, so that, you know, I kind of look at younger women coming up and I just kind of think, God, by the time they get to their 40s, 50s in the workplace, it's going to be a dream. You know, that's certainly the hope that you're looking for, because there will be, like a lot of the companies I work with, we have just some amazing well-being programs that will, you know, have great supports in relation to menopause. And one thing that I did a lot of work on last year was menopause champion training, like that, where you say, you know, a key person in HR or wherever it is who's dedicated, that some people can go to. Because, like, you know, sometimes your manager may not be the first person that you want to talk to. You know, it's going to be very individual, you know, in terms of whether you feel comfortable or not. So I think it's making sure that there's that the support is there, but I think the support has to be in different guises as well.
Yeah, for sure, for absolute sure. One of the things as well that I try and do in the workplace is to try and give a very balanced overview of what menopause care looks like. And I know this is something you and I talk about all the time. And it actually happened because I did a talk in the UK where somebody approached me and said, will you come in and do a workplace talk for menopause online? It was with the police service. I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And they said, because we had one last month and we didn't like it. And I was like, oh, that's really odd. And what happened is the person came in and they were a representative of a private clinic in the UK. And all they spoke about was hormone replacement therapy. It was all that they spoke about. And at the end of it, there was women there and even gentlemen whose wives could never take hormone therapy going, well, what are we supposed to do? It left gaps. And so what I try and do, and I know you do too, when I do these talks, is to say, you know, this is the definition. This is your 101. This is what menopause is. these are the current non-treatment options. Well, these are the symptoms, and these are the current non-treatment options that may help these symptoms. And they can be hormonal, non-hormonal, they can be non-pharmaceutical, right? Mm. It really depends on you, and you need to know that options exist. And I think that what I am trying to do is we all have our biases, but I'm trying to remove the heavy binary conversations that I see exist. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why social media pisses me off so much. It's very binary, isn't it?
Yeah. No, like the way I look at it, Amanda, like I think I just see myself as a conduit. I'm just passing the information. And I do like to think that I'm very unbiased because I'm just giving the facts. And like you, I am very, very clear about sticking to the medical guidances from the British Menopause Society, the international, etc., because I think that's where the confusion and lack of clarity comes up for so many people, where you have people on social media or wherever stating things that aren't, you know, backed up by or endorsed by any of the menopause society. So I think that is really, really important. And I think too, we've a huge part for me is respect around menopause. And I think when we talk about the management options, the scenario you just explained, that's happened to me, I think, 3 or 4 times now. I've gone into companies, I've been asked to do talks because there has been an issue of some respect in relation to the information that's been disseminated. And I think that is why it's so important. I mean, we love choice. Humans love choice. And I think it's really important that it's choice around your management options of menopause. If I said to you, Amanda, you can't go to the gym, you've only got to run, you've no choice, you know, I'd hate that. I'd hate the restriction of it. So you try, you know, when it comes to management options, we've got to realize, like, there's billions of women going through menopause, are, you know, will go through menopause, and it's, everyone's going to have a different journey. So what works for one won't work for the other. And I think that's a really, really important part of the conversation. And I even feel in Ireland, we've very much gone one-sided on that conversation. It has become quite medical, which makes me become even more determined to just make sure it's a very balanced view when I do talks, because, you know, people aren't getting the full details, the full sides of the story. And I always use a really good example is you open a newspaper, you go onto a website, and it's like, you know, for example, now it could be I started acupuncture. It could be I started HRT. 24 hours later, I felt amazing. That is not the norm. OK, it is not the norm. But if, you know, when you see that out there, you might think, oh, my God, what's wrong with me? That didn't happen to me. You know,
exactly,
so I think
like
it's
that. You can apply that to anything in life. I mean, think about the diet world, right? It's exactly the
Jesus.
Same as that. Yeah, like, and so you've got to find your own way, but you can only find your own way if you have all of the pieces of the puzzle, for sure. And so, I've definitely found that that's one of the things that Canada hasn't fallen prey to yet, because we're a little bit behind. Mm. Honestly, in the conversation, I haven't seen that heavy bias yet. And I think that might be because the people that are doing the talking don't have a huge financial bias behind them, or like companies behind them. That's what I'm seeing. And we've got some really great doctors who work for Canada Health being real amazing spokespeople. But again, I feel like it's in its infancy, even though it's getting traction. And I'm happy to be involved in this change for sure.
I think that will be interesting, because I know Diane looks at us, it looks at Ireland, and she's like, she's kind of smirking. Yeah, we've been there, you know. So I think that it would be interesting now to see how other countries fare.
Are you smirking? Is that what you're doing?
That's what I'm just, I am. I'm just kind of, I'm just wondering, you know, when we talk, you know, we talk again in another 2 years, I just wonder, will it have,
you
come on more?
And I wonder, you know, like when I've spoken to a doctor, I actually actually one in the US, and I said to her, I've noticed your messages change to be very, very pro HRT. And I don't feel like you have the balance that you had before. And she's somebody I know, and it wasn't going to be taken the wrong way. And she said, well, it's because women are still being denied access to HRT. And it's because women are still scared of HRT. And it's still because there's only a very small uptake. Women are choosing not to take it because they're frightened of the long-term consequences. And I agree with all of those things, right? I think that that is still the case. But that doesn't mean that you can't have a well-balanced conversation, right? And so I think that when people do like push the message, there's probably a reason behind it. And I think it's okay to say to them, well, you know, what about all of the women with breast cancer that can never be, like, let's just stop ignoring people, right?
Yeah.
But when maybe these doctors are only seeing the ones that are coming to them, who are desperate, who are that 25% with super severe symptoms, maybe that's all they're seeing. And so it might not be a bias. It might just be just the selection criteria that they're working with, right? So I sort of get it as well. But I still think that we can still keep banging the drum and saying, look, we're the women who this is impacting, and we have a community and we can hear all the voices.
One of the podcast sessions that I've done for this season was with Vikram in the UK, and with a focus on menopause after cancer. And I really felt, you know, massive refreshing insights and also views in relation to how women can support themselves. And I think that's the message we have to get out there, you know, that there is light at the end of the tunnel, particularly if you've already gone through the challenges of cancer, that, you know, you're not just left out there on your own, that there is support. And there's definitely a bit more happening in that space in Ireland now, which it needs to be, because our history around that would be very negative in terms of, you know, women just left and, you know, not having an understanding of kind of the surgical induced menopause and things like that. So, you know, that's another good change that, you know, more needs to happen, but at least it's starting.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah, Amanda, just in relation to policies, do you see, is there any of the workplaces or that are bringing in menopause policies in Canada?
I don't know that that's really happening yet, but the way our medical system works is a little bit different to the NHS. It is a social welfare system, you know, like it's our medical system is free for people, but people also can have insurance, and most people do have statistically some type of health insurance, usually through workplace, right? Okay. And then what that allows workplaces to do is to give people money to go see a dietitian or a personal trainer or physiotherapist, pelvic health physiotherapist, right? So workplace well-being can really be helpful for menopausal women. And so what I know is starting to happen is, you know, you can start to see the conversation in the heads of these companies is like, okay, then we need to allow like funding to be available for women to be able to have access to these different solutions that may or may not be helpful to them moving forward. But that's about as all as I've seen right now. I haven't seen any actual policy change in place, but because of this significant study that was done last year that got a lot of headlines, like I'm now speaking to company heads that are like saying, okay, we know that this is a burden on our company, what can we do? And so I think it's only a matter of time before those changes, you know, come into play.
But isn't that great though that's happened, that's kind of, you know, it's opened the doors for discussion, which is hugely, hugely important. And I wonder, one thing that comes up a lot here, and I find it quite a kind of the controversial aspect of menopause in the workplace is around the workplace leave, whether there should be additional specific menopause leave in the workplace. And that's something that it gets a lot of discussion here. But I think, you know, there's pros and cons to it, you know, but, it, you know, I'd just be interested to see whether that's something that comes up for you in Canada as well.
Yeah. So, you know, when I do my presentations, I talk about potential solutions in the workplace that can happen. I talk about hybrid working, right? Hybrid working, we did in COVID. We had no choice. We know that that works. And I talk about what other companies have done. And so I do tread carefully because I don't want to sort of say, and this is what your workplace should be doing when they may never happen, right? But I talk about what other companies have done successfully. And in the UK, there was that company whose name escapes me right now that allowed 10 days, no questions asked, leave to women and their spouses or partners based on their menopause symptoms. And the reason I put their spouses in is probably because they needed to take the kids to school or something. Right? Yeah. You know, like okay. It's that yeah. type of thing. Yeah. And I believe that that's been a successful policy because, let's face it, women do not take advantage of those things. They're not just going to take these days if they don't need them. They'll take them when they do need them. And I think that's something that I'd like to sort of like reiterate is that we're not going to try and abuse any solutions that go out there. Women go to work, they want to do well, but if they're not feeling optimal and can't like be productive and efficient in their workplace, there has to be something that the workplace does to make that for a solution to make that happen. And whether that's like they work from home that day, they go online and they, like, you know, I can imagine a woman lying on a sofa going, oh my God, I can do this lying down, but I can't do it sat up at my desk, especially when Bob's eating peanuts next to me and I just want to smash him in the face, you know? No, but I think that, you know, like different working options, I think is one of the easiest solutions to me.
Yeah. And I see, that's where I kind of get stuck on this one, in that I want an employer to do everything to support a woman to stay in the workplace, whatever that is, whether it's the healthcare aspects, you know, the managerial support, the flexible working from home, etc. So, and you would find here a lot of companies do have a very good, say, extended leave policy or extended sickness policy, that, you know, if someone had very severe symptoms with their doctor and so forth, you could argue would fall under that. I think that's a really nice ask no question. You know, I think that's a nice way to do it, because I know in Ireland, Bank of Ireland here brought in menopause leave, but I haven't seen what the uptake has been to date. But I know initially it was very, very low, because you have a drop down menu where you're putting down that you're out because of menopause. And again, that's a step that it's kind of question, are women ready to take that step? You know, so whereas I think if you have something like ask no question, that's easier, isn't it? You know, I would have thought, you know, it's easier to tick that box, you know, but
for sure. But I think that, you know, like in the UK, they've got a lot of policies there, you know, that are available to download and that companies can look at. And so I think that it's for me, it's okay for companies to have different ways of doing this. I don't think there needs to be like a global like solution. I think it can look different. But just having it as a classification in the workplace is something that's important. That's what I think, right?
Yeah.
I think that that's something that they need. And so just having that recognition is really important. So I'll keep you posted on how that goes in Canada.
Yeah,
I'd like that to get moving for sure.
Yeah, no, that'd be exciting to see. And I have, I'd flicked through the that survey from the Menopause Foundation, but I must sit down now and have a good go through it. But it's like that. It's when you start to see the dollar implications, that's where, you know, the conversation does change, you know. And I think that's an important thing, because that's really, then it means that the senior management are there, they will start to open up to that conversation. And we just needed to then kind of just drill down, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, man, change needs to happen from the top. There's enough people doing a grassroots movement. The reason I get in is often because it's the grassroots movement of women saying, will you come to my workplace? Will you come to my workplace? You know that, right?
So
getting buy-in from management is definitely like the key to making this change successful. And I don't know about you, but as soon as I've done a talk, I follow up and follow up with emails and go, hey, how's it going? Can I jump on a call? Can we see if you need any more solutions for the workplace? I make sure that, because everyone feels empowered in the moment, but then you've got to keep the momentum going.
Because I think that's a really important part of it, and I talk a lot about this with HR managers, etc. You know, supporting menopause, it's not a flash in the pan. You have to be committed to it long term, because this isn't just a trend that's here and it's going to go away. Yes, it's trendy at the moment because we're now discussing it, but the aim is that it becomes an embedded part of any workplace structure, you know. So it's just that
menopause isn't going anywhere.
No.
Let's
put it here. No. Well, Amanda, thanks a million for chatting today, bringing us up to speed, and look forward to, we'll definitely have to check in specifically on the workplace now next year and see what's happening over in Canada.
And see if you're still smoking then.
Maybe you'll bypass us. Who knows?
Who knows? Thanks, Captain. Good luck with the podcast. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Amanda. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Menopause Uprising with me, your host, Catherine O'Keefe. I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review, as it really helps the show.